TurboTax believes that with the right tools and encouragement, people can be good at anything. And yes, that includes taxes. And to help people feel more comfortable with the tax process, TurboTax Live gives you access to experienced CPAs and EAs who are happy to review your return line by line to make sure your taxes are done right and that you get your best possible refund. TurboTax. All people are tax people.
Everybody, welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's minor league podcast. I'm Steve Saifa, and once again, I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. How is everybody doing this week?
All right.
I'm still staring off into space in utter disbelief, but other than that, you know, pretty good, I guess. I'm still alive.
doing better than Alex Bregman currently, you know.
I'm very excited that Mets Fan Fest is next weekend.
Definitely nothing awkward is going to happen.
Very happy I was able to get a pair of tickets to that. That's going to be fun.
Oh, you have to tell everyone how it went. You have to write an entire piece on Amazing Avenue about it.
I'll figure out how the logistics of this, but maybe I'll like wear a GoPro as I walk around and you all can just watch on, live.
Yes, stream it on Periscope.
Yeah, that'll probably make some interesting that'll definitely be an interesting day there.
I literally can't wait.
All right. So for promote extend trade this week, born in 1883, was Enoch Johnson, who is better known as Nucky, and he was the famous political boss that ran Atlantic City and was portrayed by Steve Buscemi in Boardwalk Empire, which is, I think, a pretty underrated HBO show. So, of these things associated with Atlantic City, what are we going to promote, what are we going to extend, and what are we going to trade?
Steve, I was born to do this.
All right, well, that's good.
I mean, good. The only thing I can think of is that one Futurama reference. She washed up in Atlantic City, as we all do from time to time.
That seems like shit, guys.
We got Saltwater Taffy. We got Monopoly.
The game?
We have the game, yes. And, of course, the number one thing associated with Atlantic City, Donald Trump.
Oh no.
Oh boy.
Hashtag politics, Steve.
I think we are all going to unanimously agree who is being traded.
I wish we had a stronger word for it than trade.
Can we trade to the moon?
DFA. Did he get to start, like, failing in New York City first, and then he went on to failing in Atlantic City? I don't know.
I don't think
so. So if you've ever been to Trump Plaza, it literally, before they took his name off of it, it was literally falling apart at the seams, and I think that's a fitting metaphor here.
That sounds about right.
So yeah.
Sounds about right. Is it
literally, like, the only reason we used to go there is because our friends never got carded before they were 21. So
also sounds about right.
Literally the only appeal of the place was that they did not give, you know, a single solitary, I'm not going to care, I guess, about laws.
All right, so basically, what are we promoting and what are we extending between Taffy and Monopoly? I think they both have they bring some stuff to the table, both of them, but there can be some drawbacks. What do you guys
Taffy
say?
Taffy sucks.
Oh, come on.
I'm a diabetic. I can't have Taffy, so let's extend Monopoly.
I'm good at Monopoly, so I'll extend that.
I too enjoy Monopoly as a board game person, so... Yeah, extending Monopoly and begrudgingly promoting Taffy, despite the fact that, once again, it sucks.
Look, it's way better than the alternative. So.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, but also, seriously, let's get a candy that's was not invented in, like, 1802 or something like that, please.
But it's so good.
It's not.
Have you guys ever been in an extended game of Monopoly?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
All right. Have you ever been in an extended two-person game of Monopoly?
As in,
see, that's your mistake, Steve.
Like, did it start with just two people, or you just
no? It started with multiple people, yeah. And basically, it was just me and my brother, and neither one of us were willing to concede, and we played Monopoly by ourselves for about 1.5-2 hours.
Oh, that's nothing.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Two hours.
Steve, you've never how have you not... I was expecting you to say you were in a game for 3 days or something.
Yeah, that would have been something.
I've been in a game of Risk for multiple days.
Yeah, I've also thought that.
You guys have never played, like, Diplomacy or something like that, like a real board game that lasts...
I have Diplomacy, but I've never played it.
Yeah, it's like 3 hours is, like, one turn in Diplomacy.
Yeah, oh, I know. Geez. It's super long.
Huh. All right, so, well, then it's pretty much unanimous, except for me. We are extending Monopoly, we're promoting Taffy, and we are trading Donald Trump.
And so, before the hashtag stick to politics comments. Or stick to, fuck.
Hashtag stick to baseball comments. No, this isn't about him as a politician. This is about him as, you know, one of the worst figures.
It literally does not matter, Ken.
You're right.
All right, so vote Bernie 2020. Last week, we were reviewing our 2020 prospect list. And just to recap, 25 is Alexander Ramirez. 24 is Jake Mangum. 23 is Ali Sanchez. 22 is Stanley Consuegra. 21 is Daniel Nunez. 20 is Adrian Hernandez. 19 is Riley Gilliam. 18 is Dyson Acosta. 17 is Tony DeBrell, 16 is Jalen Palmer, and 15 is Freddy Valdez. And I think next week I'm going to have to maybe not do this entire thing because it's going to get kind of wordy at the end.
It's many names.
Yeah, yeah. But it's
just
not
a good list. It's just like depressing to hear that list, honestly.
It's so bad.
There's like three usable big leaguers.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this list of 14 to 10 will get you a little more excited. We have Junior Santos, Harold Gonzalez, Kevin Smith, Joshua Wolf, and Trevian Newton. Is that going to inspire any more confidence in you, Lucas?
No.
Oh.
I feel like this is infinitely more interesting than the names that came before them, at the very least.
Yeah, let's get into it, and I'll be the Debbie Downer the whole time, as I so often am, you know? Like, just got to stick with the hashtag brand.
At least, like Ken said, we are getting to like the interesting territory now. We're halfway done, and we're on the good side now. So first, we'll go over Junior Santos. He was signed as an IFA out of the Dominican Republic in 2018. The Mets signed him for $275,000. They were a little aggressive. A lot of times when a team will sign an international rookie, they will just kind of let him sit out the year. But the Mets assigned him to the DSL team in 2018. And, you know, he did pretty good. And they actually sent him stateside at the end of the year, playing with the GCL Mets. And then they continued being aggressive with him this year. They signed him to Kingsport. He was one of the youngest players in the league, in the Appalachian League. And he pitched in 14 games. The numbers themselves were not that great. It was a 5.90 ERA in 40.2 innings. He allowed basically more than a hit per nine. He walked 25 and he struck out 36, which is not good. But Santos is extremely young and he is one of the hardest throwers in the entire system. He's pretty big. He's 6'8". I think that qualifies as pretty big. And the fastball ranges 90 to 97. It settles in about 94, 95 or so. When I was down at Kingsport, my gun was saying topping out at 97. But the players that were sitting next to me that were charting with their own gun, theirs, it hit 99. So it could, you know, maybe theirs was a little more accurate. Maybe mine is a little bit more accurate, but regardless of the actual number, he's, you know, can touch the upper 90s with some regularity. And then complementing that, he has a kind of slurvy breaking ball. It looked more sliderish, but, you know, it might kind of develop into a curveball or a slider. There's still plenty of time for him to, you know, tighten it up and just kind of develop it. And then he also throws an okay changeup. Doesn't really have too much movement yet, but he throws it, you know, about 20 miles per hour differential, and he doesn't really change his arm slot or arm speed or anything like that. So if he can get some movement on that, that could be a pretty devastating pitch. The command isn't the best, but again, he is still really young. He's still developing his pitches, so that's something that can come in time. And outside of Matthew Allen, I'm going to say that Santos is probably the most exciting pitcher in the system. I think that even though Wolf has maybe more pedigree, I think, and obviously put up better numbers, though at a lower level, I think that Santos is a bit more exciting than Wolf, just because, you know, that there's a lot of potential. If he can work on the command a little bit, if he could tighten up his slider or curveball, whatever that's going to become, and kind of work on that changeup a little bit, that's there's a lot of potential in that arm.
Yeah, we can talk about the potential there a lot. This is just not a profile I get very excited for. Like,
there's a lot of outcomes here.
Oh yeah.
I understand why people who see it in person go gaga over it. Like, I get it.
Lucas, he has legs for days.
Yeah, no, I get it. I really do. Like, like eye tests, sniff tests, whatever other sensory tests you want to propose, I'm sure he passes it with flying colors. I feel like because of that, he this is a profile that gets overrated very often. And I don't know, it seems like a guy that's mostly just velocity and size right now, and without a whole lot else for me to get excited about. It's not like he has one good secondary that's particularly good. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me.
So personally, I like Wolf better. I'm not sure if I have a particularly good reason other than, you know, feel for a curveball is something you can't really teach. So I'll take the one of the lottery ticket arm speed guys. I'll take the one with the better secondary at present, I guess, is where I fall on it. Mm-hmm. I do think Santos has more upside.
Sure.
It's just, you know.
I mean, the mechanics are... mechanics and body are less relievery, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
My main point here is just that these guys who aesthetically look so appealing are overhyped compared to what the actual baseball skills are. Mm-hmm. I think very often, and I feel like that's what's happening with Santos right now, based on both his performance and what the reports say.
I feel like he's a kid that a lot of systems would have at like 20 to 25.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that it's like a victim of the system being kind of
like we're almost by default have to be excited about someone who throws this hard because he might be the hardest thrower in the system.
It's also worth noting, like, he's literally the second youngest player in the Appy last year.
Exactly.
And the youngest was Francisco Alvarez. Like,
The difference there is we're getting excited about,
and you know that might not be a good reason, but
like we're getting excited about Alvarez because he was good, right? Like, okay, you're young and you sucked. What does that mean, really? Like, but it's also, not like he's young and he held his own. It's you were young and you were awful, which really only indicates that the Mets probably pushed it too hard.
So I'm going to basically, I've been thinking about writing a thing about this at some point in the future about Alvarez, if I get another look at him this season, but like the Appy has a way of turning, you know, molehills into mountains. Like, see, Mark Vientos, right? He had an excellent statistic season in the Appy and regressed a bit after full season ball. I don't know that we should be taking numbers from the Appy as particularly meaning anything.
Right, just like when we say if a player has a really good season, like, okay, that's good, the numbers are there, but, you know, you like to see it, but it's whatever. You can say the same thing about the opposite. When a player does bad, you don't want to see it, but it's whatever.
So, like, Lucas, I think you make a valid point. I don't know if we would be excited about him if this were a different system.
That's fair.
And I don't know if excited is the right word to describe it, you know?
I would say interested, maybe.
Interesting, like, yeah. Basically, like, there's a chance he ends up very good. There's also a chance he burns out before he gets into A-ball.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's put it this way, right? Like, I would rather the Mets have targeted arms like this when they traded all their relievers away, right? Because this is the kind of prospect you should get when you trade that kind of player.
He's functionally no different than Catalina, who they traded.
Right, exactly. You
know? Yeah.
You take enough of these lottery tickets, one will work out.
Mm-hmm. And right now, it looks like the Mets have exactly one.
They have exactly one, and hope to God it works out.
Might, because sometimes you buy one lottery ticket and you win.
Yeah, and there's a lot to like here. He's got very clean mechanics. He's, you know, very, very big in ways that speak well for his future development, particularly that most of his height is legs.
Yeah. And for me, the mechanics is one of the things that I'm a sucker for. Like, I watched Wolf and I was like, reliever. And like, And like, I'm going to probably think that forever. Like, even if he ends up being a starter, I'm going to be like terrified of it. Like,
you still think that when you look at Chris Sale?
So, you know what? I'm a little afraid he's going to fall apart. And like,
and honestly, like, that's a good fear to have. Like, for every one Chris Sale, there's 1,000 guys without those mechanics who are not absolutely. Sale.
Sale was one of those guys that, like, I was always saying that, oh, he's going to blow out his arm and that's it. And he never really did. Like, he was hurt last year, but, like, it wasn't to the point where I think we should be worried about him going forward. But for the most part, like, mechanics are a thing that when I see clean mechanics and a repeatable delivery, it's like, ooh, and he throws hard. It's like, ooh, yay. And the Mets don't have anyone like this. And it's like, let's go. Like, this is actually someone to really focus on when, like I said before, in another system. Like, this is like, oh yes, this is the sixth person we have who's 17 and could do this, because that's just how the Mets have operated.
We operate like a, you know, professional baseball team.
The funny thing
I'm sitting here and trying to remember what the actual rankings I submitted were, because Lord knows I don't remember them at this point. But I think my overarching point is that we get excited about the upside here and somehow discount all the risk and then overrate him relative to a guy like, I don't know, like, well, DeBrell had a good season. I would say DeBrell, but like, I don't know. I don't want to say Harrell because that's a little different, but overrate him compared to guys who are definitely less upside, but closer to the majors. Kevin Smith, I guess.
So what I would argue to that is the upside is what you really want out of these guys, even if they're not going to even if they don't realize or actualize on that potential. The potential is what you want in minor leaguers because, you know, you can find a Kevin Smith reliever for nothing. Mm. You know, you're chasing upside because, or you can find, I mean, Kevin Smith, I honestly think he's a loogie. You could find a loogie for $2 million on the market pretty much at any time.
You would also like to have that for free. Like, not for free, but
you would like to have it, but the reason why I will always chase upside in guys like this is because the potential for reward here is where the super, you know, the extreme value comes from.
Yeah,
that's a fair point.
You know, a conversation for maybe a future episode, maybe after we're done with the list, talking about the things that we personally
No,
value.
I mean,
oh yeah. I
also, whatever. I'd like to say that that take could look very dumb in a few years.
Oh yeah.
Well, sure, but also you could look like a genius in a few years when you get on the high upside kid and he's a superstar, and you're like,
I think the point stands that like that's personally a bet I'm willing to make 9 times out of 10 because you know you hit one time out of those 10 and it's completely worth it in terms of surplus value and what you're getting, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For what it's worth, Lucas, you ranked him at 16.
Where did I rank? Well, my question is more, where did I rank him relative to the other pitchers? And I don't remember. But the bigger point being
Wolf,
that I...
Wolf is right behind him. You had him, Wolf, at 17. You had Smith a few spots above him at 14.
Okay. All right, so my internal logic is consistent, at least. That's something.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, there's kind of a big blob in this system in this range, and ordering them is extremely arbitrary, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was something you said in Slack, Lucas, that stuck with me back then. It was just like, we were talking about the back end of the system, and you were like, it's all the same. And yeah. I was like, we could have the rank everyone completely differently. And I'd be like, yeah, I know why you ranked him at 20
I'm pretty sure that you rank like the top 7 in this system, and maybe you swap a couple of them, but it's fairly set. And then after that, it's like,
whatever, whoever you want. Like whoever is your personal choice, really. Right. There's no
it's literally all arbitrary. Like,
yeah,
none of this has any meaning. It's all going to look extremely different in a year.
Oh yeah,
it's just a fun exercise to do. And you know,
that's one interesting thing, one kind of fun thing about the system being as weak as it is. There's a bit more turnover, if you want to call it, a bit more variance year to year than you would if you had a pretty strong system where, you know, the top, let's say, you know, 10, even maybe 15 is kind of like static. And then you have the second tier guys, you know, filling in.
Yeah.
But it's kind of fun when it's just such a free for all like the Mets system is right now.
There's more room for like guys to fly up out of nowhere and be like a legitimate prospect in the Mets system, and that's kind of fun in like the looking at the silver lining for having a bad system type of thing.
Yes. All right, let us take a quick break here, and when we get back, we will go over the next couple of prospects in the system.
I'm Jillian Weinberger, host of The Impact, a podcast from Vox about how powerful people affect the rest of us. This season, we're looking at the big ideas from all the people running for president in 2020.
Hit this opioid crisis head on.
Public option.
Move away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency.
And it's going to be a great wall, and it's going to work.
A lot of those ideas have actually been tried before, like that wall Trump wants to build. Nogales, Arizona has had one on its border for decades.
I don't understand why individual people have a right to have a fence, and yet a country can't.
Senator Warren's proposal to end the opioid crisis? It's based on what we did to fight the AIDS epidemic.
We would like to name it the Ryan White Care Act.
And the Green New Deal. Germany tried something similar in 2000.
This is the solution.
This season on The Impact, we have those stories. How the big ideas from 2020 candidates worked or didn't work in other places or at other times. These are the stories that will help us understand what might happen if these proposals get rolled out here in the next 4 years. Subscribe to The Impact on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app to get new episodes now.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and oh my God. Let's start over. I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. All right. So we just spoke about Junior Santos. And next we're going to go over Harold Gonzalez, who is kind of the opposite of Santos in almost every single imaginable way. Santos is a huge guy. Gonzalez is kind of slim, you know, six foot 160, which is not that big in baseball terms. No. Santos has a huge fastball. Harold does not. His fastball sits about, you know, 90-ish, you know, 90 to 92. you know, on a good day. Santos' command is not really that great. Harrell, he's able to command pretty much all of his pitches. And he has a pretty big arsenal. They're all pretty developed. Jumped the gun a little bit there, but so, you know, Harrell's been in the system for a while. Steadily has improved basically every year since he's been in the system, which has kind of been fun to watch. I don't really think that there's been anybody else that you can really, you know, if you had a stick to measure like the incremental improvements, I don't think there's anybody in the system that you could really see as much as Harrell.
How many straight years have we had him on the 25 at this point? Like five?
Yeah.
Six?
Yeah.
I just want to say that this is the content I crave.
Everyone loves Harrell. But, you know, he kind of put himself on the map in 2015 when he was with Kingsport, and, you know, there's good reports of the stuff. In 2016, he was with Brooklyn, and obviously Brooklyn pitching in Brooklyn is very helpful for pitchers, and Harrell basically almost won the New York Penn League Triple Crown. He went 7-3 with a 2.01 ERA and a league-leading 88 strikeouts. I think he needed just one more win that year to actually win the Triple Crown. He got promoted to Columbia. You know, the numbers trended in the wrong direction, but it's still okay numbers. He was promoted to St. Lucie the next year in 2018. Stuff looked pretty good. He was promoted to Binghamton, and then just everything kind of fell apart. And now this year, he started the year in Binghamton. Stuff looked good. He was promoted to Syracuse, and, you know, kind of figured with the way everything was going in the International League, with the ball kind of flying out of the park and offense spiking and everything, that, you know, a guy like Harrell, who doesn't have premium stuff, he would kind of get whacked around. But surprisingly, he didn't. Harrell's pretty good in Syracuse. He had a 2.68 ERA in 40 innings. The strikeouts were down, which is not great, but I mean, the results are there, and this close to the majors, you know, you the numbers do kind of matter, so it's good to see results. But yeah, I mean, the fastball is not the best. The secondaries, they're not the best either. It's basically everything he has is kind of average across the board. But sometimes players like that, they just kind of are better than the individual parts. And, you know, hopefully Harrell, when the 2020 season starts, he'll probably be in Syracuse. Hopefully he's able to continue pitching well there, because he is probably like 6th, 7th, 8th, somewhere around there in the depth chart. So if the Mets call him up, something, as we've said before in the past, either something is going very well for him or something is going very wrong for the Mets. And, you know, that's one very good outcome and one very bad outcome. So
you're trying to think who's actually ahead of him.
Lockett might be, like,
yeah,
according
so
to
I think
the...
that's I think I mean, that's yeah, the interesting question here is he better than Walker Lockett and those guys? The guys that who have historically been the depth starters.
I don't know. Like, I would rather him be called up than those guys.
Oh,
like,
hard same. Yeah.
So yes. Like, just because we've seen those other dudes and it's hasn't been good, so I'd rather give someone else a chance. Really, like, if we're being honest, like and he's been steadily improving for so long that giving him a shot is it's the good thing to do. I think, like, a reward for, hey, you've been good in our system for a while, so you deserve to be on that list.
Like, I also don't see him as appreciably worse than any of these options, so why not throw the different one in to the mix?
Yes.
Realistically, you're starting at 7 already because they signed both Waka and Porcello for whatever reason.
I mean, Peterson, I would say, is probably ahead of him just because the numbers are the numbers might not be better, but the pedigree, draft pedigree, and the stuff is better, so he would be ahead of him.
I mean, I'm Oleg, but Peterson is probably better than Harrell, yes.
Oh, yes, I would say 100% he is.
As much as we'd like to deride Peterson and love Harrell for non-performance reasons,
Peterson's going to have a 10-year career.
Yeah.
That's going to happen, probably. Just lefties pitch forever, you know, his pedigree, how much they paid to sign him originally. Like, he's going to get chances that Harrell is not.
So Harrell,
for his minor league career, he hasn't been bad either.
Yeah, he hasn't been good at times. Looked good.
Yeah.
Now, most of those times he's looked good have been. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. Yeah. we'll get there in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So Harrell is like behind the front six, and then Peterson, and then it's sub mishmash of Harrell, Oswalt, and Lockett. I asked this a couple of weeks ago. Lockett out of options?
This is some. I will consult the Google.
Yeah, let us consult the Google on that.
If it came up a few weeks ago, I don't think anybody's actually cared enough to look.
Oh,
yeah.
Hold on. I am on COTS contracts right now. Continue talking so that.
Yeah. Okay, we'll play the Jeopardy theme while Ken acquires this vital information.
Just like Butcher Pete, I don't think we have the rights to that either.
Oh, God.
I know.
Does humming count in terms of...
I don't want to get sued, so let's not...
Do a jazz whistle rendition.
COTS contract is not the way to do this, apparently.
No, I think you have to use roster resource. But I'm
spot rat.
I think he is out of options, which then begs the question of what the hell happens to Walker Lockett when...
I mean, he should probably not be here, then.
Yeah.
Well, I mean... He's probably going to get waived or whatever at the end of camp. And then
a team like the Orioles will.
Yeah. Drop. He's either going to get claimed by a terrible team to eat innings or he's going to go to AAA. I don't even think a terrible team will claim him, to be quite honest with you. Like, I don't. But
probably
I also.
Probably not. I mean.
Like, I just don't see it at all. And I don't know who else could, but the Mets did enough to trade for him, I guess. So.
It's true.
Insert rant about projection spreadsheets and their uses uses.
In all fairness, he is out of options. They traded. We're also forgetting Steven Gonsalves. So,
Gonsalves.
I always want to say Gonsalves, but it's AL, not LA. It bothers me. So he's also probably ahead of Harrell. So. Assuming that Lockett gets the boot when he doesn't make the roster out of spring training, which he shouldn't, then it's Corey Oswalt and Harrell for that like eighth, ninth spot on the depth chart, which is almost certain to get some shuttle innings or even a spot start or two.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
They'll probably fight it out in Syracuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whoever's better at the time that we need an arm.
Yep. Look, we love Harrell, but he's probably not a great starter. I don't know that he'll be any better than Corey Oswalt, but it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. He's just likable. So
yep.
More than you can say about a lot of guys that are, you know, 8, 9, 10 in the depth chart.
Yep.
And when you're down that far, it might as well be fun.
Exactly. All right. Next up on the list is Kevin Smith. He was drafted in the 2018 draft in the 7th round out of the University of Georgia. signed for $222,000, which was about $300,000less than slot value, and was sent to Brooklyn that summer. He pitched pretty well there, started 3 games and pitched out of the bullpen for the rest of the season, posted a sub-1 ERA in about 23 innings. He was sent to St. Lucie at the start of last year, and he was surprisingly good. 17 starts he made, and he posted a 3.05 ERA in 85 innings with 83 hits allowed, 24 walks, and 102 strikeouts. He was promoted to AA at the end of July, and, you know, not as many innings in Binghamton as he had in St. Lucie. But the results are still pretty good, a 3.45 ERA in 31 innings. 25 hits allowed, 15 walks, and 28 strikeouts. Just the peripherals trend in the wrong direction again, but, you know, end of the season, recently promoted to, you know, a much tougher league to pitch in. So, you know, that's fine. The numbers, you know, weren't catastrophically bad or anything like Tony DeBrell's. So, you know, nothing really to worry about. Smith's stuff is not that great, especially for the numbers that he was posting. That's kind of more, I think, minor league statistical noise as opposed to, you know, the truth, quote unquote. The fastball is 88 to 91, which is not great velocity wise, but it has a lot of arm side run because of his arm slot, which is very low 3/4. And it has a very high spin rate. So those are two good things that kind of make up for the lack of velocity. And as a left-hander, you know, a left-hander doesn't need to be throwing 92, 93 in order to, you know, succeed in the majors. His best secondary pitch is a slider. It's kind of like a big frisbee kind of slider, which is makes it really tough against lefties. And he's able to command the pitch, you know, working it pretty much top, bottom, left, right, wherever. And then he also has a changeup. It's not really that great of a pitch, but, you know, it gives him another option to just kind of, you know, change timing and just kind of get guys looking when they're, you know, get to trick guys, you know, when they're looking for a fastball or if looking for a slider. You know, he's a guy that I don't, you know, if you said last year that you were gonna, if you said last year that Kevin Smith was gonna be, you know, a sleeper of yours, I would say that you're a liar because really nothing, you know, in his body work in college would have, you know, really said that he was gonna do as good as he did in St. Lucie and in Binghamton. And then obviously, you know, Brooklyn numbers are very misleading. But it's good that he put up the numbers that he did put up. And I personally am still not, you know, sold on him. I think that he is going to be a lefty reliever at the end of the day. I think we all think that. And, you know, that's useful. You know, that is the goal of your minor league system, is to develop players. And a problem with the Mets have had is they've not been able to develop these kind of like role players and from in-house, and as a result they've had to go out and get guys and pay money for kind of stupid roles. So, you know, it's not an exciting role if he becomes, you know, kind of left-handed specialist that has the ability to get right-handers out, but, you know, it is a useful outcome. It's a good outcome and successful outcome, just not, you know, an exciting one.
I think Thomas put it best a couple of minutes ago that while, yes, you're chasing upside in minor league players, it's also good to develop this guy internally.
Yeah.
Have I told my story, my Kevin Smith story on the pod, where I looked at the gifs in John Troupin's article about him this year, and I literally thought he was Daniel Zamora because their mechanics and everything look identical to me.
That's funny. I mean, I have an obvious weakness for new age numbers, so the high spin rate stuff interests me. But like, you're right, the arsenal and everything looks very loogie-ish. I also am pretty. I'm sure there is with some of those newer newfangled technologies, the teams have both better numbers and better insights on how to. Yeah, trash cans. have better numbers and better insights on how to use them. And there are a decent number of smart teams who seem to just kind of blindly be chasing spin rate. Now, I don't know if that's just a byproduct of being cheap or if there's some actual underlying reason for that we just don't have the public-facing data to be aware of.
So the one thing to be wary of with spin rate is not all spin is like good spin.
Of course,
and
right.
I'm not sure. Yeah, so that's why spin efficiency becomes a thing. And basically all the public-facing numbers don't, like, you know, adjust for spin efficiency.
Right,
so you could have a lot of spin that's not adding anything to the effectiveness of the offering, you know?
Who was I reading about recently that's like a poster child for this?
I know Dylan Cease has a problem with that. He has a fastball that cuts more than it should and would benefit from trying to tweak his hand position to get more spin efficiency.
That tidbit catches my eye a bit about Smith. But yeah, you're right. It looks like they copy pasted Daniel Samora's mechanics, and that's probably what he is.
He might be a sleeper to get some time rather soon.
I would imagine that he ends up on the big league roster at some point, if not this season, next.
Like, because he was already at Double A. If he's at AAA next year and he's still producing, because, I mean, he might be just one of those dudes who outproduces what we think he does, similar to Harrell, where no one ever thought Harrell was going to be able to do this, and here we are. And if Smith does have that slider, you might be able to just stick that in the pen and say, hey, throw that. Yep. Like, put slider as number one instead of number two, and then there you go. There's your career.
And honestly, the Mets should do a lot more of that.
Yeah.
Guys who have one really good pitch. Like, you look at guys on other teams. Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo's actually interesting, because if you look at it, his fastball also gets extremely good results.
Yeah, I know. But I'm like, I don't think he's a starter. Like, I'm firmly in the
camp.
He's a reliever. Yeah.
He's and either a top five reliever in baseball or like a middling back end of the rotation starter. For me, that math is very easy.
Yeah, like he's like the high end version of what we're talking about here, because I don't think Smith has the arsenal. But like, it's just one of those things where you have to make use of what the guy has, like you were saying.
I also wonder if there's something to it, because there are always those guys that seem to outperform their stuff for whatever reason. And I wonder if historically that has been guys with good spin rate, because it's not something you can really see with your naked eyes. You're like, wow, this guy's fastball isn't impressive, but it's blowing. It seems to keep working. And maybe that spin rate is a factor.
You say you can't see it with your naked eye, but basically my understanding of high spin fastballs is basically you can go back years and guys who talk about the fastball rising.
That's fair. That's a fair.
Like point. I remember, I forget who it was. It might have been Willie Mays, who was talking about Juan Marichal.
Yeah.
And it's like his fastball would rise. That's the effect.
Right, absolutely. But I'm saying that's probably a bit harder to see than, this guy's pumping 95 and it's cutting in on hands or whatever, right? So that's it's just harder to pick up.
Yeah. It's harder to game plan for, too, I'm sure, as a batter, like in the batter's box as it's happening.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's an optical illusion. It's our brains are wired not to account for this.
Our stupid dumb lizard brains are
in improv circles it's your dumb mammal brain.
Yep.
Need baseball brains. All right, let's take another break here, and when we get back, we will we'll talk about our last two prospects. So we will be right back after this. Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I am Steve Sipa, and I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. I did it.
There we go.
He did it.
All right. So next up on the list is Josh Wolf. He was drafted this past season, 2019. He was a second round draft pick out of St. Thomas Catholic High School in Houston, Texas. And very similar to the second round draft pick from 2018, Simeon Woods Richardson, a guy that had a lot of helium coming into the draft out of Texas, pretty well built right-hander, big fastball. Obviously, Woods Richardson was traded, not in the system anymore, but it's good that we have pretty much a carbon copy to replace him. So the Mets gave Wolf a $2.15 million signing bonus, which was $780,000 above the slot value of $137 million. And obviously his selection kind of got overshadowed when then in the third round the Mets went with Matthew Allen. And, you know, luckily the Mets are able to sign everybody, which is going to be a big boon to the system, hopefully, in, you know, the next couple of years. But he was assigned to the GCL, very limited innings. Obviously, you know, you don't need to really tax a high school kid. But in 8 innings, he allowed 9 hits. He walked 1. He struck out 12 while posting a 3.38 ERA. And so I was talking about Wolf's fastball before, and it sits in the low 90s. Could top out as high as 97. It has a bit of life, and he uses the entire zone. So good, that, you know, things that you want to see. And then complementing the fastball, he has a slider, he has a curveball, and then his changeup. They're all kind of works in progress. The curveball is the best of all of them. It's in the high 70s, low 80s, and has pretty hard 12-6 break. And, you know, in a year or three, who knows what his I'm sure that he'll still be throwing the curveball because it is a pretty good pitch. But, you know, he might still be throwing the slider. He might phase it out. He might still be throwing this changeup that he throws. He might start, you know, switch grips and throw something separate. But it's pretty good, you know, frame and everything. 6'3", 170 pounds. So he's tall and lean. That suggests that he might add some more muscle, and either the fastball will sit higher, or maybe it could even top out higher, possibly both, hopefully both. And really, just the biggest knock about him is the mechanics, like we kind of alluded to before. They're pretty rough. You know, it's kind of relievery. Hopefully, though, he will continue starting, you know, once he is eventually hopefully makes the majors. But if he became a reliever, I would not be surprised. And depending on the need of the team at the time and how well he takes the role, you know, it could be a blessing in disguise, because he could, you know, have the he could have the makings of, you know, possibly a high leverage reliever dude. Who knows? With projecting 5 years from now, a lot could happen. But yeah, this is, again, like we were talking about Santos, this is a guy that in a better system might be further down the list. But in this current one, he is 12. So go figure.
When I first saw him, the first thing I thought of was,
what am I saying?
When I first saw him after they drafted him, I was watching some of his stuff, and he looks exactly like Addison Reed, I feel like. When he pitches, like, the first thing I thought of, I was like, oh, Addison Reed. And that was like, oh no, that's a reliever, and that's a real and that's a really messy mechanical situation. Mm-hmm. And like, that's a pretty good outcome. Like, it's not a great outcome because he was a second round pick, but like, if he's a high leverage reliever like that, then
there's worse ways to spend $2 million, you know.
Yeah, no, oh, yeah, for sure.
Like,
such as Gavin
the Tabini. Mets have found worse ways.
Oh, for sure.
I think Wolf's a big leaguer. That's enough for me. I mean,
especially in this system,
a big leaguer. That's enough for me.
Especially in this system, like, we can't really be choosers. I mean,
yeah. Sonali, I like the guy who I think is going to end up sitting closer to the high 90s than the lower 90s. You know, just given his, you know, he's rail thin right now. If he puts on like a reasonable amount of weight as he gets into his 20s, like. I think, you know, in short bursts, he's going to be closer to 95 to 97 than lower, you know?
And if, yep. And if his curveball feel keeps coming along, then that could be a really dangerous 1-2 punch.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I have two questions related to Wolf for everyone. First of all, like, we're obviously very happy with how the draft turned out, given that they got Allen, they even got McIntosh later on, whatever. But at the time, after day one, when you're walking away with Beatty and Wolf, how did you guys feel about this pick, about picking Wolf?
I personally, given where I fall on the risk-reward spectrum, I like Wolf a little more than I liked SWR, particularly because I think there was a little more projection to go with the relievery mechanics.
Yeah, Woods Richardson is kind of – he's not – I don't really know how to say it. He
I think
is
I described not, it as okay. Go ahead, sorry, Steve.
Oh, sorry. He's not like thick, like, but he's just built. And I don't think that he's going to be growing much more. I think what you see right now is what you get.
I don't think it's impossible that he adds more to his fastball. I don't necessarily know where it would come from.
Right, exactly. That's a very good way of putting it. And you have some mechanical tweaks that might help, but that's not a guarantee.
Wolf, it's very easy to dream on where it would come from.
Yep.
This guy's a stick figure at present. It's not unreasonable to think that as he gets older, he's going to put on good weight.
A lot of Chipotle.
Yep. A lot of double chicken.
Chicken? Well, first of all, Chipotle. Why the fuck are you going to Chipotle? Chipotle sucks.
No, you don't know the story with that? It's that you can get a ton of protein for $10.
I'm aware. Chipotle is still bad.
Listen, we all didn't have the ability and the blessing to be in California and eat like real
tacos.
Yeah, so don't take my Chipotle away from me.
They give you a lot of protein for
that. That's the point. My second question, and I've raised this in a different way on the pod before. If the Mets, instead of doing taking Wolf, had gone into this with the total plan to get Allen and then grabbed, say, Noah Song for $100,000 instead of Wolf, where would you rate Song in this system right now compared to Wolf?
I would have rather they'd done that.
I mean, of course. And I don't think you can't hold it against them because I don't think they knew this Allen situation was going to develop.
There's also risk factors with Song that are unique. Like,
yes.
There's a good chance he, you know, they're not going to be able to get that exemption, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think if you knew beforehand that you were going to float Allen, the Song pick would have been better. And I'm still just curious, based purely on Song's skills, where you think he would have ranked in this system.
For me, he would have been easily within the top 10.
Yeah, I think so too, right? Like, he's better than Wolf. Yeah,
I would have, personally, looking at my pref list, I would have put him above Peterson, probably below Vientos.
I would have gone above Vientos. Oh, without discounting for the military.
I think you could make a very compelling argument for him to be between Batty and Vientos in either direction.
I might even think above Batty.
I think that might be higher.
I think that's also fair. Noah Sutton.
You can make the case to make him higher.
Right.
You can make the case that he would have been the highest ceiling person they got.
Yep.
Coming out of the
still like Allen a little better, but I understand where you would be coming from if you didn't.
That's like a comfort, like an actual like comparison, I think.
Noah Song's really, really good.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Knowing the Mets though, if they went and got him, then he would not have gotten the exemption.
Well,
the
of
Mets
course
would've...
not.
The America would be going to war with Iran right now and he would be killed, and that's Mets.
Oh no.
That got dark in a hurry.
Yeah.
So Josh Wolf.
Look, I'm fine with Josh Wolf. It's just another high school
arm
lottery ticket. And if they want to trade him and someone else for the equivalent of Marcus Stroman in a couple of years, just like they did with SWR.
You do that 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sometimes it's about prospects.
9 times out of 10.
Sometimes
the best use of a prospect is in a trade for a known quantity. You know?
Yeah, there was a different sport, obviously, but the Rangers GM was talking about that because they have a lot of prospects right now. And he was like, some prospects will help us by being Rangers and some will help us by getting guys who will be Rangers. And like, that's a good way of looking at it, I think, where sometimes like the point of the prospect is never to play for you. It's to help you get someone who will make you win, because that matters too in the long run, obviously.
If only the Mets system was as prospect laden as the Rangers system.
Oh, exactly. But
two very opposite points.
Then I would be on here incurring the wrath of like Jeff and everyone who follows him by saying I don't get it with Leodis Taveras. But that's a whole nother thing.
All right, well, let's finish up then with another prospect that you don't get, Shervin Newton.
Hey, no, I absolutely get Newton. I love Newton last year.
Yeah, so Newton was signed as an IFA in 2015. Basically, the Mets gave two big bonuses to Andrés Giménez and Gregory Guerrero, and that ate into most of the money that they had. So the next biggest signing bonus that they gave after those two was $50,000, which is not a lot, and it was given to Newton, who was at the time a 16-year-old shortstop from Curaçao. Wasn't really impressive in his first year in professional ball, but he was better in the second year in 2017, and then he was promoted to Kingsport in 2018, and that was basically where he put himself on the map. He more than held his own in the Appy. He hit 280, 408, 449 in 2018. And then last season, he was promoted to Columbia and it did not go well at all. He started the year with a shoulder injury, so that basically took a month out of his season. And when he finally got on the field, he just basically struggled for the entire season. Maybe there was lingering issues from the shoulders issue. Maybe he was just, you know, overmatched by the guys in low A. You know, a lot of guys in low A are those kind of advanced international dudes or like kind of college players. So, you know, he may have been facing stuff that he'd never seen before. Maybe he was just kind of, you know, adapting to tweaks to his swing, changes, things like that we don't really know about. But whatever the case, he did really bad. In 109 games, he hit 209, 283, 330. And also the fact that Segra Park is, you know, a good field for pitching, so that didn't help either. But, you know, he's a year older, but other than that, all of the stuff that made Newton, you know, a very intriguing prospect in 2018, all that stuff is still there. He's still pretty lean and tall, so he, you know, is probably going to add more mass. The power, which was his, you know, main tool, still plenty of raw power. You know, the hit tool was kind of always lagged behind, and that obviously was the problem in 2019. We'll see how much that changes next season. Obviously, though, you know, it needs to improve, because if you can't hit for average, then you're not going to hit for power. So, but on the other side, defensively, he has experience playing second, third, short, and he's pretty good everywhere. He has quick twitch muscle, so, you know, he's quick to react. He reads the ball off the bat well. His range is good. His arm is good. And, you know, all those are good, you know, qualities for any part of the infield. And even if, let's say, you wanted to put him in the outfield, either permanently for whatever reason, or, you know, maybe as a kind of super sub kind of guy, he probably is athletic enough to survive in the outfield. You know, the arm is good enough for right, certainly for left, maybe not center field, but he could go in a corner in theory. So, yeah, I mean, nothing really has changed except for just, you know, a lot of adversity last season and another year older. He's not super old, but he is getting to the point now where you need to start seeing some results. And 2020 is going to be a big year for him. If he does good, great. If he does bad, you know, I wouldn't write him off completely, but, you know, it's, he's starting to come to that point where now you need to start seeing results.
It's worth noting that shoulder injuries suck.
Yeah.
They're both hitters and pitchers. They're, I mean, outside of the totally fluky, non-usual family of baseball injuries, shoulder injuries are probably the worst thing to recover from.
Yep.
Maybe an Achilles is worse, right? But that's not nearly as common. That's worth noting. But he did have a lot of swing and miss issues before this season.
Yeah, he strikes out so much.
He's very, very raw. And it makes sense that he's raw given his background and everything, but at some point, like Steve said, he's going to have to hit, and at this point in time, I'm not comfortable saying he's going to, you know?
It's fair. Oh, yeah.
There's also a lot of upside here. There's a lot to like with Newton, you know. Yeah. But at some point it needs to come together, and it hasn't yet. And, you know.
He, like, yeah. I hate saying this, but he has to make contact more, you know.
Yeah, that's a really tough thing to project.
I know, yeah. Like, he just has to.
Like, we talk, like, soft skills in baseball, you know, baseball-related skills. That's one of the hardest.
And I feel like that's such a, I don't know, like, it's not a helpful thing for me to say sitting here right now that, oh,
just hit the ball more.
Yeah, just hit the ball. Yeah, exactly. But, like, that's really what
so
the problem
easy.
Is.
So easy. You just solve baseball.
Exactly. Like, just everyone needs to hit the ball when it's
you
through.
Could be Mike Trout with this one simple trick. Doctors hate him. Don't click that link, kids. Gives you viruses.
Like, he struck out 139 times in 109 Oof. Games. Like, that's a lot.
That was an improvement. Like, early in the season, his strikeout rate was like 50%, and it went down as the season went on.
Exactly. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he hurt his shoulder, and then the Mets were like, yeah, it's fine now, but it actually probably wasn't. And
rub some dirt on it.
Yeah, and he was
Met
playing
player
a little...
playing through injury. Where have we heard that? Well, right, every time is where we've heard that one before, right?
Exactly. Right. When you're a kid, and when you're hurt, and when you maybe are still hurt, and you're playing against better competition, it's a cocktail of just not a good season. So,
I'm willing to hand wave away this previous season, but with the basically as you know, injuries might have played a role. He's still very raw, whatever. But at a certain point, it needs to happen, and it hasn't yet. And yep. You know,
exactly. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And you would hope that I mean, I don't know. I wonder how much he loses that power if you try to tweak the swing for more contact. Maybe it all goes away.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a hitting coach, so.
I also think it's worth noting that maybe we don't have this conversation about his shoulder if this is an organization other than the Mets.
That's absolutely very true.
But don't want to get too deep into it.
he didn't go to like Barwis or anything the last offseason, did he?
I mean, maybe. Who knows?
Not to my knowledge. Not.
I mean, baseball also as a sport is very difficult on your shoulders when you aren't doing things thousands of pounds on your shoulders. Like,
and like his swing, like it's hard to say, but
it's
you know
very
like when this. Yes, exactly. When they say like Vladimir Guerrero had a violent swing, try to like conceptualize that. And Newton has a violent swing like that. So you know, a quote unquote violent swing is probably not. I don't know if you can quantify it, but it's you know possibly worse off for the shoulder than you know a less violent swing.
That's just to me. That's
however
logical.
Ergonomics like, work. Yeah.
That's just the logic behind like it looks like a lot more effort in it. So.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair.
And also, those swings are just not really what you want to teach. So maybe it's just something that got him this far, and it can't get him any further. You never.
It's like he's like that kid at T-ball who's just or when you're playing wiffle ball in the backyard, you're swinging as hard as you possibly can to get it over your neighbor's fence or whatever.
Yeah.
I do so. It's not really a pitch recognition issue with him, is it? Because he still
he is not good at pitch recognition either.
Yeah.
It's so, just like Thomas was saying before. It's just a cocktail of things.
Yeah.
In his case, it is really just a lot of different things. That
I phrased that poorly. I was trying to say like his pitch recognition is not the weakest link. He just does not have that bat to ball skill.
Right. I think that if possible, and again, I'm not hitting mechanics are the most difficult thing for me as a person looking at players to kind of understand and conceptualize. So I don't even know if this is possible, but you know, it would seem to me that if his swing was less violent and he spent more, you know, time staying back, because he does have good bat speed. So if possible, you know, you have those milliseconds, use them wisely. If he could stay back longer, you know, he would make, you know, more time to see the ball and then hopefully better contact. But I don't know how you would teach that if you, you know, can even.
Yeah, I'm not totally out on him yet. I'm still hoping because the physical skills are fun and the performance last year was fun. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, he's basically got a mulligan because of everything that happened. Mm-hmm. But it's put up a shut up time.
Yeah, for sure. Where do you think he is this year? St. Lucie?
I would probably push him.
I mean, I guess really there is no real spot for him in Columbia anymore, assuming that they send Brett Beatty up to Columbia, assuming they send Jalen Palmer up to Columbia. You know, you could have Newton be playing second base, but I feel like that's kind of wasting his talents there. You might as well continue developing him as a shortstop.
I don't know that I agree with that. I think
or third base, excuse me, also, which he played a lot because of Mauricio.
But is it more worth it for him to get his bat back?
Right. I'd rather send him to a level where his bat can adjust and worry about the defense later.
Very true also.
And I imagine they're going to do Palmer at short and then Beatty at third.
And he plays second, yeah.
Yeah. I'd be fine with that.
That'd actually be a fun infield.
That'd be a lot of fun, yeah.
Who would strike out more, Palmer or Newton?
Yes.
I was going to say, you think Newton strikes out a lot.
for sure. Weather pattern changes around the ballpark with those two in the lineup.
Also, it would be a fun thing in Columbia to have a team to, like, care about, kind of, because they were just something else last year.
Let me phrase that another way. It'd be nice to have a team that doesn't suck.
Yes. I was trying to be nice, but...
Yeah, well...
52-84 last year, which is not what you sign up for in the beginning.
I watched a lot of those games, man.
It was so bad. So bad.
There you go. Columbia lost again.
There were times recaps where it's just like, 13-0. They got one hit. and you're writing the recaps and you're like, yeah.
Pretty sure the entire homestand that I went to last year, 7 games and they won one of them. So Yeah.
And that was their third highest winning streak of the season.
Yeah. Steve, I haven't done this yet because, you know, I've only been doing farm reports for so long, but at some point I'm going to want to write one of those games up just with the not great Bob GIF.
Yeah, I mean,
hey, if I'm being honest,
are you cool with that?
we should totally take more liberties with farm reports. Like, it gets slow through the middle of the season. You spice it up a little bit.
There definitely have been times where, especially with Las Vegas, given the fact that, you know, they would end their game
at
1:30, 2 in the morning, that I would just be like, yeah, so they played a game and they won. Or they played a game and they lost. Whatever.
Pete Alonso hit a home run.
The end.
That was
Vegas,
it.
Vegas won. The end.
Pete Alonso and like 12 other dudes hit home runs because it's Las Vegas.
At least we had Pete Alonso. I mean, I'm talking like... Alan Dykstra hit a home run at the end.
35-year-old Aaron Harang pitched. He gave up 10 runs.
Wait, was Dykstra the first baseman I'm thinking of that we always wanted to see get a chance, and then they traded him to the Padres instead? Or is that someone else?
Pretty sure that was Dykstra.
That was Dykstra. Yeah, I think so.
He is with the Padres.
Good times.
So, you know, when Columbia is bad, when any of these teams are bad, when St. Lucie is bad, they're very bad. Feel free to spice things up.
All right. 1:18:20. We have authorization for GIFs in the farm report. Repeat. We have authorization for GIFs in the farm report.
Everybody heard me.
Uh-huh.
Given that there's no such... Given that GIF is peanut butter... And GIF
is pronounced GIF.
Guys, we've had this fight before.
We will have this fight until the end of time.
All right, well, how about all of our listeners out there send us emails or send us Twitter?
Tell us how to pronounce GIF.
Yes, go ahead. We'll see who wins. although if they're texting us or emailing us, they'll just say GIF, and then that doesn't really help.
Aha!
The question will never be solved. But you can email us at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. or you can follow us on Twitter and send us comments there. I am at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at lvlahos343. Ken is at kenlevin91. And Thomas is at sedmetseasonszn. And he's also going to be running for Mets manager in 2020. So we wish you well, Thomas.
But only if you also follow at Rich Staff.
God, again with this?
It's the bit that will never die, Lucas.
We need to get him verified first. Then it
that is my goal. I want Ken Rosenthal retweeting Rich.
That'll be the day. Well, subscribe to our podcast. If we produce content like this, though, then don't subscribe to our podcast. Rate and review it, though. That is true. We will be back next week, though. More top prospects in 2020. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.